Welcome to Calibrate Conversations, a podcast about embracing God's standard for sexuality. I'm your host, Brady Cohn, and joining me today is our special guest, Shannon Ayer. So Shannon, you are in the great state of Texas. You are working with the Citizens Defending Freedom as the education director. And as you know, I'm in the middle of kind of doing a series on libraries and protecting kids from obscene material. And I've been absolutely astounded at what I found at the ideology being driven in libraries, both public libraries and school libraries, the books they're putting in kids' hands that are absolutely obscene and agenda driven, especially with LGBTQ and sexual content. And you are on the forefront of helping equip parents to navigate this and protect the rights of their kids. So why don't you just tell us a little bit about yourself and about what led you to this role, a little bit about what the Citizens Defending Freedom is doing, and then we'll get into the nuts and bolts about what parents need to know and how they can fight to protect their kids.
Awesome. Well, thank you, Brady, so much for having me. My name is Shannon Ayers. I am really just a small business owner in Frisco, Texas. My husband and I had our own business for about almost 20 years, and COVID hit. And that's when kind of everything started coming to light as to what was happening in a lot of areas, but specifically also in what was happening in our schools. And I started, we were all locked in our homes for a really long time, watching the news day after day, the death ticker on CNN. And all the stories started coming out about things, that parents were finding out about what was going on in their child's classroom, because class was, they were at home, having school at home virtually. And so I started hearing about these books in these libraries. And I'm like everybody else, pretty much. I was like, well, that's not happening in my area. There's no way. I mean, it wouldn't happen in Frisco, Texas. And so I started getting some titles of some of these books and looking them up. And of course, being completely appalled that would be provided to any child anywhere, let alone a taxpayer-funded school. And so I started looking in my own school district just to see. And sure enough, they were there. And since then, I have not found a school in all of Texas that doesn't have these books. So come to find out, we weren't alone. It's pretty much every district in the state and probably the country. I haven't done as much work around the country, but in Texas for sure. And so I don't know, I guess I just got, during COVID, I got really mad. I almost lost my business. It was a birthday party business for children. As you can imagine, it was a destination, place. And so that was completely, I didn't close my doors, but the fear was so great that nobody was wanting to have birthday parties for their kids. So almost ruined my business. And so I started getting, active and just protesting. I was just mad, right? So I just started protesting, on all whatever I could, masks or, schools being closed, and found myself very frustrated because it seemed like no matter how much protesting we did, no matter how many rallies you went to, it didn't matter. Nothing was changing. Nothing was happening. And I kept thinking, surely this is against the law that I could get kicked out of a store for not having a face covering over my mouth. You need it. What are you going to do? You need a lawyer. You need money, to fight this. And are you even going to win? And so I just kept getting really frustrated. And a friend of mine who felt the same way had been approached by CDF, Citizens Defending Freedom, asking, they were opening up county chapters at the time, and they wanted her to head up the Collin County chapter of Citizens Defending Freedom. And she called me and told me about it. And she said, I don't know if I want to do this. I don't know anything about the organization. As she's telling me about it, I'm looking it up online and saw what they stood for and saw what they were fighting for, and saw first and foremost that they had two pieces of the pie that I felt like were missing. One was the ability to get media to shine media and get the media to pay attention to things that were happening. They had access to different media outlets. And more importantly, they had a legal arm that provided free legal assistance to just your average citizen who whose constitutional rights were being violated, which of course I felt at the time, you know, that and they were, our constitutional rights were being violated. And so they had the two things that I felt like were missing in most of your grassroots organizations that were rising up at the time. And so I told her, we have to do it. You have to do it. And I have to do it with you.
Awesome.
The rest is history. So yeah. And that was of course volunteer at the time, but it's since turned into, you know, a fully paid position. So I'm now the Texas Education Director, and we don't just fight the books. I mean, it's anytime a parent needs help, because parents are, they're fighting their districts. These districts are massive, and they have, talk about legal, I mean, they have entire legal departments that parents feel very outnumbered, and they are.
Yes.
And so we will step in and help parents with grievances, and anytime they feel like their school district has violated theirs or their child's rights, we will step in and help. So
that's awesome. I know the legal system can be so hard to navigate. I'm fighting a lawsuit against myself right now, and just trying to find a lawyer to represent you, and just, it is intimidating. And for parents trying to fight for the rights of their kids, then within the legal system, when you have these big school districts or whatever government entity it is that have all these lawyers on staff, it is extremely, extremely intimidating.
It's intimidating. And like you said, try to find a lawyer who will help you with a grievance at a school.
Yes.
You know, absolutely. They're just not going to do that. They're going to, you know, nothing against, you know, is it ADF, all these wonderful organizations who come in and help. But they typically will take the bigger cases that are going to be nationally, you know, have national impact. They're not going to take typically a mom who has a grievance with their school district. And a grievance sounds like it's just a little complaint. You just go to your principal and you just tell them that you're upset about something, but it's actually a legal proceeding. It's actually a legal process. They have their lawyers there for the grievances. So, but parents typically don't, they don't even know they're supposed to have one. And so that's where we will step in and help.
That's great. What kind of issues are you seeing with schools? Obviously, you were awakened to the books that are in schools, and that's kind of what I was talking about in this series is libraries. It goes for both public libraries and school libraries. Right. And so to me, I was just astounded when I discovered how widespread this issue is of these books in like every library. I thought that the ideological issues with libraries was in big cities that were hosting drag queen story hour. I didn't realize it was in small town Wyoming and small town Texas and everywhere. And that
everywhere.
Entire library kind of industry was being, has been infiltrated and is mostly made up of, you know, very extreme LGBTQ minded activists. And that goes from the top down, from the American Library Association, which every state library association is a part of. And they push these books down from the top. And it's absolutely astounding to me that people don't see what a problem this is.
Well, they are starting to see it more and more, but you're absolutely right. I mean, these institutions that have been trusted, you know, institutions for a very long time, and maybe at one point, you know, could be trusted, cannot anymore. And unfortunately, it's taking a long time for people to figure that out. And so I don't like to cast shade on every single librarian out there.
Absolutely.
Because
I'm sure that there are some great ones.
Yeah, I think most of them probably are great. And most of them who even, you know, defer to the American Library Association, they've been teaching for a long time. That's been their trusted source for a long time. And they just don't realize it, you know, that they've been captured at this point. And so when you've got an organization that is literally led by a self-proclaimed Marxist lesbian who says she wants to use her position as the president of the American Library Association to push her agenda. I mean, they're not they're not hiding what they're doing. They're very out and open about it. And so, you know, I just think more and more librarians are figuring it out, but there are some who are actively trying to push this content on our children too. And those are the ones that I feel like need to be held accountable. In Texas, we just haven't really had much luck in the legislature. We've been fighting, me personally and you know, a group of grassroots activists have been fighting for the last two sessions. We're only in session every 2 years here in Texas. So the last two sessions we've passed legislation, but neither time have we passed legislation that has any kind of accountability in the law. And so, no, you can't have these books, but if you do have them, oh, well, what's going to happen to you if you have them? Mm-hmm. I mean, the only thing we really have at this point has been public outrage. And that means you have to let the public know. You have to educate them on what's happening. And so many times I find, you know, I tell parents all the time when I meet with them or just meet somebody, I tell them, ask them, are you aware? And they say, no, there's no way that stuff's in our schools. And I'll pull up excerpts on my phone and I'll show them books that I found in Frisco ISD or in their district. And they just don't want to believe it. And they're shocked. They're shocked when they find out what kinds of books we're talking about. Because of course we're called book banners, and you know, book banners have never been on the right side of history and yada, yada, yada. I hear that all the time, but we're not talking about burning books or banning them from bookstores or even public libraries, where a parent is typically taking their child to the library and can guide them to or away from whatever. And
hopefully it would be in the adult section, but that's not the case right now. A lot of those are the kids sections, which I think absolutely needs to change.
Absolutely.
But at least, you know, most of the time you are taking your child to the library, and you just have to be so cautious and not let them pick up a single book without you looking at it first, which is such a crazy reality. But, you know, I hear the excuse all the time is like, well, it's up to a parent to decide what their child reads. But in a school library, the parent is not there.
That's right.
When a child picks up these books and sees these images and reads these words, like, that is forever ingrained in their mind. There is then no control that a parent has over that. And so that excuse that parents need to, you know, can somehow monitor what their kids see is absolutely ridiculous.
It is. And they also, there's districts who have policies that, for instance, you know, have an opt out policy. So if you want to opt your child out of checking out a certain type of book or certain books, then you are free to do that, but don't try to control what other kids get to see. And my answer to that is always, you know, these parents, they have to know the names of every single book, of every title.
Tens of thousands of books in the library. How are they supposed to go in online and, you know, opt out of every single, you know, inappropriate book? It's just absolutely impractical. And for the ones that have images in them, you know, their child picks up the book, opens up and sees the images. The child doesn't know that, oh, mom put this on the opt out list. But it doesn't prevent them from seeing what's inside of it.
That's right. And the kids don't have to check out a book in the library in order to see what's in it. They can sit in the library and look at it. So this, you know, you can opt your kids out of being able to check these certain titles out, even if you know the titles. Okay, well, how are you going to stop them from seeing it in the library when they're sitting in the library and not checking it out? So, I mean, the bottom line is we've always protected kids. We've always had a different standard for kids. That's why we had the brown paper bag thing over the Playboy magazines in 7-Eleven when I was a kid. You couldn't see that because they wanted to protect the kids. It's why the FCC has rules about what can be on network TV and what can be said over the radio airwaves when children might be present and might be hearing. We've always protected kids from this stuff. But yet somehow now, this content is allowed in our schools when parents are not there to be able to protect them or steer them away if they want to. They are a captured audience when they're behind those school walls.
Absolutely. So when it comes to the library aspect of schools, then we'll talk about some other aspects like curriculum. When it comes to libraries, like, what should a normal parent do? I mean, my wife and I, we're going to homeschool. We're here in Washington where things are horrible.
Oh, wow.
And so but not every parent can do that. And, right. you know, and I know there's awesome public school teachers and there's awesome public school staff, and many of them don't realize what's happening. And, some of them are trying to push back as much as they can on the inside. And so we don't want to just dog on all public schools.
Right.
But what should every parent be doing who has their child in public school to protect their kids?
Well, the first thing I tell them is to homeschool. So yay for you. I'm so glad you're doing that. I do think that that's the best answer. And it is a choice. I mean, and you're right. Not every student can do that or parent family can do that. Pay attention, look at what your kid's coming home with. There's so much now that's being done online. So always check your student's laptop, or their device that they're given here in Texas. I mean, I think every kid down to kindergarten practically is given some kind of laptop or some kind of device. Those devices, they say are locked down or they have, you know, filters on them, but there's ways around that. First of all, the kids probably can figure out a way around that before.
Yes, the kids probably know way more about it than the parents.
Yeah. But secondly, I mean, there are school districts are subscribing to different services that provide gateways to things that you do not want your kids accessing. And there's two companies in particular, EBSCO and I'm blanking on the other one. I'm sorry, Gale. Gale, G-A-L-E, and EBSCO. They are huge providers of library content or curriculum type content. It's kind of like a closed Google. So instead of sending kids to Google to search for like a research paper or something, they send them to one of these subscription services that are supposed to be locked down and safe, you know, for kids. These are libraries or resources that are put together for schools. So you would assume that they would be vetted and safe. They are not. And so I would tell parents to watch those, see what your kids are accessing. Always check what they've accessed and what they're accessing. And sometimes, sadly, it's too late. They've already seen it. And like mm-hmm. you said, once they've seen it, you can't unsee it. But that's really, if you're gonna give your kid access to a phone, to unlimited access to the internet, then that's what you're opening up to your kids potentially. So you just need to have as many filters on there as you can and watch and pay attention. Watch what your kids are bringing home. Watch what the lessons are saying. I've seen curriculum with all kinds of DEI stuff and LGBTQ stuff. And
what should parents be watching for in curriculum? Obviously you want to, be vigilant with everything, but they're mm-hmm. so sneaky about it. Right. And so they bring DEI stuff and LGBTQ stuff into math lessons and everything that they can. And they'll say, oh no, we're not teaching critical theory, but it's embedded in
everything.
Every other subject. And so should parents be watching for? And then how do parents push back and protect their kids in those situations?
Well, it depends, of course, on the state you're in. I mean, here, anything DEI or CRT is illegal. Doesn't mean it's not happening. And so in a state like that, I would say, you know, again, look at all the lessons, look at the lessons that your kids are being given, and read them yourselves. And if you deem them here in Texas anyway, as, you know, being DEI or critical race theory, any of those things, or the gender ideology, all of that is illegal now in Texas. Then you need to contact Citizens Defending Freedom and let us know, and we'll help you, because that is illegal here in Texas. Now in a state like yours, it's probably not illegal.
Yeah.
And so, make some noise. I mean, just get loud. Yes. Go to your school. Go to your school.
It was actually a process for it to become illegal because parents were advocates. And so tell us a little bit about that. Like, how are you fighting at the grassroots level to pass these laws? And it feels like so hopeless in a state like Washington, like I'm in. But still, we need to be involved, whether it's the local school board, the state, at every level.
That's it. I mean, for parents, I would say, you know, and I'm guilty of this. I was guilty of this. I'm embarrassed to say, as the state education director for Citizens Defending Freedom, back before, say, COVID, my kids are grown now. They're out of school. But when they were in school, I never went to a school board meeting. you know, you go and it's not the most riveting meeting to be mm-hmm. a part of, to be in, but that's where you're going to find out what they're passing, what they're doing, what they're advocating for, and what some of the issues are. Go and speak at your school board meeting. If you see something that you don't like that's happening in your kid's classroom, I mean, you can go to the principal, you can go to the teacher, but if you're not getting the response that you want, go to your school board meeting, speak in public. It's, you get 2 to 3, maybe sometimes 5 minutes, depending on the district, to stand up and say whatever you want. So get up and say it publicly on the record and gather other parents that are like-minded to do the same. I mean, unless you're loud, they're going to continue to do, if, let me just say this. I go to school board meetings all the time now. They are largely empty rooms where these school board members are just doing whatever they want and nobody's watching, and they know nobody's watching. The time is now for parents to start taking the front seat and taking charge of their own kids' education instead of dropping them off and treating it as babysitting, you know, which is really a lot of what it's become, unfortunately. Take an active role. It's one time a month they have a school board meeting. It's a couple hours. Go and sit and listen to what they're doing and speak during public comment. There's always public comment period. You can't always, depends on the district, you can't always speak on things that are not on the agenda. But if you can, do it. And if not, watch the agenda and speak on things that come up on that agenda that you feel are important to you. Also, have a relationship with your school board members. Email them. Let them know who you are and what you want and what you expect. They work for you. You elect yes. them, and vote in your school board elections. If you don't like what your school board is doing, unelect them and find yes, somebody definitely. Else to run, or you run.
Yes.
You know,
we need more people in those positions, you know, in yes. all kinds of local government. And I feel like for those of us who are Christians, it's really hard because we're devoting so much of our time to our church and yeah. ministry. And, you know, I have sometimes 2 or 3 evenings a week that are taken by church stuff. Yeah. And so it's really hard to devote more time to local civic government, but that's how we have these rural towns that are being run, and rural school districts being run by all liberals with a liberal agenda, because we're not making the time to step in and serve in those positions.
That's right. We need Christians. We need Christians serving in all of those positions. And there's a, you know, that's part of what CDF does, is we activate, or we try to activate the church, because so many of them won't even touch politics. They won't discuss it. They won't touch any of the issues of the day even that are happening. I mean, we've tried to get pastors here to come to school board meetings, and some we had a few that will, but most will not touch it with a 10-foot pole because it's too political. But you know, our families, the destruction of the family is the destruction ultimately of the country. It's just Absolutely. Going to be. And so, that should be our first ministry, is our family. And what happens in our schools directly affects and impacts our children. And if they are being exposed to not only sexually explicit stuff in the schools, and not just, you know, in books or in curriculum or what have you, that's affecting their brains. That's affecting the way they view the world. And it's
absolutely,
you know, it can yes. be, it can be undoable. Like, you can't undo what they learn and see. And so aside from the books, I mean, there's boys and girls bathrooms, right? I mean, there was the issue of Title IX during the Biden administration, where they tried to actually change the definition of the word sex in Title IX so that boys would be free and allowed to go into any girls' sports or bathroom or locker room that they wanted to. Thankfully, that rule change didn't happen. And so Title IX is restored back to what its intention was. But, you know, I mean, people had to fight for that, which is just mm-hmm. unbelievable to me that was even a fight.
Yes. So I think that just so many parents are naive to what's actually happening, and they don't realize that some of this stuff too, is none of it's a mistake. It is an agenda being driven and purposely being put in the hands of your kids.
And purposely being hidden
from
the
They have money, and they have money collaboration, mm-hmm. you know, the LGBTQ lobby, the teachers unions. They have money and they are well organized, and this is part of their purpose, is to indoctrinate your kids.
Absolutely. And they hide it. They know that they're doing wrong because they hide it from the parents. I mean, we had talk about your little rural towns, right? We have a little rural town up in north of where I am, Anna, Texas, very small, very conservative. But even there was a junior high school boy who started coming to school the beginning of his junior year dressed as a girl. Full on dressed as a girl. And instead of the school calling the parents and saying, "Hey, we've noticed a change in Johnny, you know, just wanted to make sure you were aware." He's coming to school dressed as a girl and he's, you know, asking to be called by a girl's name. Instead of doing that, they didn't call the parents at all. And they just changed his name to a girl name mm-hmm. and they changed his pronouns to girl pronouns. And for an entire school year, he was called by a different name than his parents gave him. And his parents didn't know until the end of the year when someone finally had the guts to take a picture of him and send it to his parents. And that's how his parents found out. And of course, they were mortified and, you know, embarrassed and all of those things because they were the last to find out. I mean, how dare a school district do that?
Absolutely. And that is a major problem all across the country. School districts actually developing policies that not only allow that secrecy, but actually demand secrecy.
Yes.
And that's driven by the LGBTQ activists where, you know, they try to claim that any parent who is not instantly affirming of their child's, you know, LGBTQ identities is harmful and abusive. And so they're not safe. And so we have to protect the kids from non-safe parents and we can't out them but all the parents are labeled as unsafe. And so they're circumventing the rights of the parents and purposely keeping this a secret. And then many times actually aiding in the transitions. And that varies state by state.
Obviously, yes, it does.
Here in Washington, it's one of the worst. Minnesota is absolutely one of the worst. And there's many of them that actually will provide, you know, not only help with social transitions, but things like chest binders, referrals to places where kids can get hormones and actually have medical treatments as part of their gender transitions that is being pushed by school staff while the school staff has to keep it a secret from parents.
Yeah, that is insane to me. I mean, that's not the case in Texas. Parents do, you know, are required to know. I'm not to say that's not happening here. I think it is, but we do have laws on the books that prevent it, or that are supposed to prevent it. But you don't have any recourse in a state like California, you know, or maybe in Washington, because it's the law there. And so at least we have the law here to say you're breaking the law and, you know, you have a leg to stand on, but it's just insane to me that that's even a question anywhere. I mean, these children belong to their parents. They don't belong to the state or to the education system. And you've heard people from these Texas or these teachers unions say that the kids belong to them.
Yes.
I don't know where that comes from.
Absolutely.
It's insane.
Yes. And so parents need to be aware. And, you know, I'm actually somewhat encouraged where I live here in Washington amongst the Christian families, like public school isn't even the option. It's not even something they deliberate about. Right. It's just, you know, they all homeschool. And so then there's so many resources for homeschooling and there's co-ops and there's classical conversations and there's so many activities and things that cater to homeschoolers because it's not even a consideration. But I come from Nebraska, a much more rural place where parents mistakenly think that they're safe because this is such a rural place. And it's the same fight there. And, you know, most kids are still in public schools because the public schools is such a foundation, the center of the community and the source of identity. And parents just have no idea that in these rural places, the ideology has been pushed into their small town schools.
It's true. It's very true. And I think it's time now for people to really kind of, you asked, you know, what things the grassroots can do in terms of legislation. You can, you know, get to know your legislator, who's yes. your House representative, who's your senator, and go and meet them. And so that they know who you are when they see yeah, you coming, they know who you are.
And be friendly and absolutely, you know, and celebrate respectful. The good things that they do. And when they make the right choices, thank them for that. And you know, they need to know that you're watching, not necessarily out of a threatening way, but they right. need to know that you're watching and that you care and that you want to partner with them to pass the right policies that will protect kids. And then you hold them accountable when they don't. But you know, we don't always just want to be the loud, obnoxious person who shows, oh, that person's here again, right?
I try not to
sometimes
be.
Sometimes it might get to that, but yeah. we start with trying to be kind and having yeah. a good relationship and partnering with you know, our representatives well, and then we hold them accountable when we need to.
Right. I mean, we always, Matthew 18 is our model at CDF. We always go to the officials first privately because we assume that they're going to want to do the right thing, that they're just not aware and they want to yes. they're going to want to do the right thing. And so we've always operated under that method where we will go privately first to a school board member or to a teacher or to, you know, a legislator and try to work it out privately behind closed doors. But when that doesn't happen, that's when we will, you know, get loud at a school board meeting, not scream and yell. I'm not talking about that. I'm just Absolutely. Saying go and let your voice be heard. And if that doesn't work, then we bring in the media. And if that doesn't work and there's a legal constitutional issue at hand, then that's when we bring in our legal team.
Absolutely. And that's awesome. And you know, go to those meetings, like be prepared, write it out in advance.
Yes.
I spoke at our city council meeting a few months ago about a different legal issue. They're the ones that are suing me, our local city. Oh, gosh. And so completely ridiculous. And we're still fighting that. But wow. So I had it written out in advance and make it kind and factual. Sometimes I see people go speak at those meetings like, I don't think you really represented our Coswell because you're so belligerent and just making accusations that I don't think that's factually true
right.
and assumptions. And then that causes them to just dismiss us. And so we need to be prepared, be factual, have our ducks in a row, write out what we're going to say. And that goes a lot further.
And practice because yes. you're timed and they will cut off your mic when your time is mm-hmm. up. And so, I mean, I highly recommend what you're saying is writing it all out, practicing it over and over and making sure that you're within the time limit that you're given. And because also, you know, many times for me, I have so many words to say that I have to time yeah. it because if, you know, if I have one or one or lose my train of thought, then I'm not going to get it all out. And so I always write what I want to write down, what I want to say. And it's okay just to read it, straight from the paper. And know, you know, make sure you make the point that you want to make within your 3 minutes, but yes, be respectful, be kind, and always have your facts. Don't repeat something that you've heard, even, you know, on social media or from your best friend. I tease my friends. I'm like, I trust you. I love you. I believe you, but I'm going to look for that myself because I want to make sure I don't want to go up and say something that's not true because it does. You ruin your credibility when you do that. And so very, very good advice to write it down and just read it.
Absolutely. That's great. We are going to be running out of time here. What other encouragement do you have to parents? Any other, you know, any other areas we haven't covered? We've covered going to school board meetings. We've covered books and yeah. libraries, watching for things in curriculum. What other things with our children's safety should we be aware of?
I want to go back really quick, if I can, to the argument on the books, because I do think when you're arguing that, for any parent who's going to stand up and argue that, the words that you use when you're arguing that are very important. Because to you and me and to the average citizen, the average person, especially the average Christian, everything in these books is, we would call obscene. We would call it obscene. We would call it harmful to kids because I do believe they're harmful to kids. But those are very specific legal terms. The definition for obscene is a very high bar. And most of these books, even though you and I would call them obscene, they do not meet the legal definition of obscene. So when you stand up before a school board or you stand up in your legislature and you argue that these books are obscene or harmful, you don't look credible because they technically, legally, these books are not that. The definition for obscene is for hardcore porn. And it has to meet a three-prong test called the Miller test. And that's a very hard definition to meet. And so in Texas, for instance, and this is for, you know, other states who want it, you'll find in most states, that's the, I mean, Miller versus, I think it was Miller versus state of California, I think is where it came out of, that definition of obscene. That's federal, that's across the whole country. So if you're trying to pass legislation in your state to get rid of these books in your school libraries, you want to steer away from using those terms. Those things are already illegal in schools. Hardcore porn is already illegal in schools across the country. So when you're fighting that, you're not addressing
helping
now.
The situation because you're it's not going to eliminate what the problems are right now.
That's not what's in the schools. In the schools, you're talking sexually explicit. You're talking, we in Texas now, we just passed legislation that's profane and indecent is not allowed now in schools. So those are your FCC definitions that govern radio and TV. So now in Texas, you cannot have a book in the school library that has a scene in it that could not be played in a scene on TV, on network TV, like Channel 5 or, you know, well, channels are different, but NBC, ABC, CBS, or if it can't, if it's an excerpt that couldn't be read on the radio airwaves between the hours of 6 a.m. and 10 p.m. when children might be present, now those kinds of scenes cannot be in books in school libraries in Texas. So look for terms.
Oh, that is so helpful.
Create laws in your state that have a different threshold for school libraries. For school library books. And so I'm finding most people have, even legislators have a hard time wrapping their brain around that. We're talking about it, creating a different standard.
I've been talking about all these obscene books and I didn't realize that's not the definition we need to be going by.
Right. And most states don't have any other definition for content like that. And so we had to create new definitions here in Texas, and other states are doing the same. I know they're trying to do the same thing in Oklahoma right now. I've helped them a little bit with that. But, you know, your legislators still want to, and we still fight it every day. They want to use obscene and harmful, and they always fall back on that three-pronged Miller test. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the first prong, just FYI, is you have to take the book as a whole. We lose every time on that because that means literally every page has to have something nasty on it. So you can have a whole book about gardening. This is my example that I use. You can have a whole book about gardening, 10 chapters of gardening. And in the middle of that book, chapter 5, there's a book of a man raping a little boy, very graphic description of a man raping a little boy in the garden. That book would not be considered obscene under the law. Because it's just one chapter, just one piece of a large, and the book overall is
shocking.
So that's my point. You know, if you use obscene in a legislative session, they're going to say that's already illegal, and that then these books don't meet that definition, and they don't. So the third prong is literary value, and that you're never going to win on literary value with a librarian. They're going to say they've got literary value.
So I know. That's what I've heard a lot in looking at some of what's happening in libraries is they claim that everything has literary value. And so then that's literally a legal reason why they can have it.
Right. And so you lose on that every time. So create new definitions, new categories for books that you don't want your kids to have access to in school. And for in Texas, for instance, profane and indecent, there's also the PICO versus the Board of Education use the terms pervasively vulgar and educationally unsuitable. Unfortunately, though, the Supreme Court did not define those terms. And so we have districts here that are like, well, it's not pervasive because it's not every page. And it's not, and they just don't think it's educationally unsuitable. And that's another term that since it's not defined, you're never going to,
you have to be very specific in the laws because everyone can interpret them so differently.
That's right. So you need specific definitions in your law.
So, that is, really great to know. What else do we need to know?
Pay attention. I mean, I would, we try to focus on with the books on getting people in districts to do their own audits. And we have, we actually have resources on our Citizens Defending Freedom page at citizensdefendingfreedom.com. And we have a resource library. And if you go to the Texas Library, the Texas Education Resource Library, you'll find a guide there on how to audit your school libraries. Now, it may not, I don't know that it would work in every state. It's probably pretty similar, I would guess, in every state. Most school district websites are generally the same. You know, they may look a little different, but they've got the same tabs and the same drop downs and stuff. So look for your library services page. And usually your library catalog is going to be online. So anybody can get in there typically and search to see what's in their library. We have a list on our website of books that we find, that we have found, that we believe are problematic, that you can start with. Because, you know, like I said, parents don't know the names of these books. So how do you search for a book or opt out of a book for your kid that you don't know the title of? So we have a list of a little over 400 titles. We don't go too crazy, but we're adding to the list all the time as we find them. And if they are sexually explicit and graphic, then they are on our list. And that would be a good list to start with to audit your own library. So, and then if you find books in the library from the list that you don't like, our list also has links to excerpts of the books so that you can actually see what's in the books for yourself. If you don't have an issue with it, then you don't have an issue with it. But if you do, at least you have proof there of what's in the book. You can take it to your school board and ask them to remove the book and find out what the process is to get them removed. There are challenge processes at every school district to try and remove the books. We go through that challenge process a lot, and we lose a lot. but we win some too. And what we really find to be the most effective is to gather as many parents as you can and get loud, go to your school board and read from them. I mean, I have gone to many school boards and read, from these books out loud. I've even got shut down by a school board president telling me to please stop reading that because there was a child in the room.
They're giving it to the kids in the school.
Exactly. So, I mean, I just looked at her and I was like, are you kidding me? I mean, that's my whole point. She said, did you know there was a child in the room? And I said, no, but what I should have said is, do you know that there are children in your school libraries? But of course, I didn't think about that until after the fact. But she made my point, and that's why it actually ended up going pretty viral on Twitter, because it was just so, the hypocrisy was just so astounding. Everybody in the room gasped when she said it, because it's like, okay, well, there's kids reading this in your libraries. Do you care? So, make noise, audit your school library, look at what your kids are bringing home, look at all their assignments, check their devices every day. And don't think that just because it's in a school, it's that they've got your kids' best interest at heart, because unfortunately, what they think is good for your kids is not always what you think is good for your kids, especially if you are a Christian. Yeah.
Yep. And I keep hearing the line from librarians that we are trained experts, and so you need to be able to trust us. It's like, no, I think we've learned the lesson on that.
That's right.
These are the specific books that you're putting in the library, so obviously we can't trust you.
That's right. I was in front of the Texas legislature last session. I was testifying before the House Education Committee on this bill that just passed for the profane and, you know, prohibiting the profane and indecent books. And one of the legislators, one of the Democrats, said, obviously, because another person testifying had read from a very nasty excerpt from one of the books earlier in testimony. And he said, you know, obviously we can all agree. I think we all agree that this kind of content is not what we want in our libraries, but that he was trying to say that most of the books that we were referring to were not that bad, that was the exception. And that we can all agree that those books don't belong on the shelves in the library. And I just was thinking, no, we don't all agree, obviously, because reconsideration committees and challenge committees all over the state, all over our state anyway, I know personally have reviewed these books and said they're fine and kept them on the shelf.
I keep hearing from parents that go through the challenge process and the committee says that it's fine.
That's right.
And they make it so long and tedious of a process that in the meantime, it stays on the shelf. And then most of the time they don't win.
That's another thing in Texas that we just changed. This new law says now that because you're right, before when you challenged a book, the book stayed on the shelves while it was being challenged, and they dragged out that challenge process for years. Now with this new law, that it specifically says that while the book is being challenged, it gets taken off the shelf immediately upon being challenged.
That's great.
So, yeah. So they were saying before, you know, it's First Amendment. You can't take it off the shelves because of the First Amendment. Well, clearly it wasn't the First Amendment because now the law says otherwise. So don't always believe what you hear. That's another thing. You know, fight for what you believe is right, even if everybody's telling you you can't get it done. Because you can. Mm-hmm. You can. A lot of times you can get it done. And we just had the Fifth Circuit. I don't know if you're aware of the Fifth Circuit ruling recently in the Little versus Llano County case.
Yes. Bonnie told us about that.
Yes. Yes.
And so that is a big win. And hopefully that has some precedent around the country that they ruled that they can take out books from the children's section or from the entire library, for any book for any reason.
For any reason.
Yeah. And so when they use the excuse, well, it's the First Amendment of right. It's like, no, like that does not apply to having every single book available to every audience. And you know, Bonnie, everyone who hasn't watched the episode with Bonnie, needs to go back and do that.
Yes.
But, you know, one of the things that she pointed out was that so many of these books can't even be read in prisons. They're not available to prisoners because they're so obscene that they're protecting the prisoners from these books. And yet they're using the First Amendment as an excuse to give them to kids. And again, we are not banning books or burning them. You can buy them on Amazon. Do what you will with them in your own household. But absolutely, we are for protecting kids in public places, which is libraries and schools.
I always say, because people they'll poke fun at me, you know, you're with Citizens Defending Freedom, but yet you don't believe in the freedom of these kids to have these books. And I always say, you know what? I believe in the publisher's right to publish them, the writer's ability to write them. They have the right to write these books. They have the right to sell these books and make money on these books. Everybody has their right to to all of that. But when it comes to kids, we've always protected kids from this kind of content, always. And it absolutely shouldn't stop in the library.
Yes. And so this isn't a new thing. We've always had laws to protect kids from graphic content, and that needs to be applied to the modern day, what is being put in their hands.
Yeah. And said they need to see this content because some of these kids are suffering some of these, they're experiencing some of these things that they're reading about in these books, these graphic rapes. And maybe they are, but good grief, can we not do better for those children than to just hand them a book and let them read about their
absolutely
own abuse?
And read it on their own in silence,
yes,
where they're filled with shame. And it's like, yes, some of these books, you know, especially where I'm more attuned with the LGBTQ activists and mm-hmm some of these books like, well, these kids who are LGBTQ, which I would argue with that definition, it's like, no, you're giving them the idea. And, you know, it's because of you that they're starting to identify that way. But it's like they need to feel like they're not the only ones. Like some of these books are so graphic. Like this is what kids use to, pardon my, you know, graphic words here, but to masturbate to, right? This is sexually arousing to kids, adults. You know, the book that I post about that was in a bookstore in small town South Dakota last month. It's like, you know, Gender Queer. I'm sure you're very familiar with it. It's like these pictures in it, that is like sexually arousing in of itself. That's not helping a child who's already dealing with this feel seen and understood. That is giving him ideas and planting graphic images inside their head and causing kids to actually go that direction, right? And try to explain that these books aren't making people gay. It's like, yes, they are. Minister to those people every single day to where it was books, it was websites, it was pornography that gave them the idea that maybe this could be who I am. And maybe this could be a way that I could feel loved. Maybe this could be a way that I have an escape, especially with, you know, transgenderism. Maybe this can be a way that I can be someone different because I don't like who I am. It's these materials that are giving kids those ideas.
That's right. That's absolutely right. And I also ask people, you know, that say we need to hand a book like that to a child who's experiencing those things. I'm like, would you take that child, for instance, to a rated X movie that had that kind of scene in it? Like, say you have a child who's being, you know, violently raped by their stepdad or whoever.
Yeah. So you want
to take
them
to see that, happening so that they can see themselves in the movie? I mean, that's just an insane argument to me. I don't understand that logic at all.
But it shows that behind the progressive ideology, especially LGBTQ issues, is such a spiritual blindedness and demonic, and I don't use that word lightly,
right.
And that there is a spiritual just darkness behind it that wants to give kids these things because it makes no logical sense. It's not healthy psychologically, emotionally, mm-hmm. spiritually. It is absolutely spiritual darkness.
It is. I use the term soul crushing. It is. It's
yes.
soul crushing for these children, and it's devastating. Yes. So, yeah. So we are on the right side of the argument. It's an uphill battle, sadly. I mean, I couldn't have believed that that would be the case even 10 years ago. You know, it just seemed to have devolved very, very quickly. And so it is a fight, and
I want parents to know that the fight is worth it, and you can win at times. And so it's worth it locally, statewide, nationally. And we see you guys have had a lot of wins in Texas. And I know that that's different, but no, I have parents in Nebraska who feel defeated. And it's like, out of all places, that should be a place where they should. So I want to encourage them to keep on fighting because you can win. Wyoming, they feel pretty defeated in some ways right now. And so, but keep on fighting because you can have some wins, but if you get enough people on board, and we need to spread awareness.
Yes, absolutely. And I mean, we still feel defeated here, even in Texas. I mean, we're still losing in some areas. I will say too, I mean, one of the things that parents will do is they'll challenge these books, and they go through the first phase of that, and they lose and they give up. And when there's appeals that can be made, right? And we had one parent in the area who went through every single, at the time, it was 3 different levels of appeal within the district. And then after that, if you still didn't like their answer, then you would have to go to the Texas Education Agency and appeal it there. And it had to go through, you know, an administrative law judge and then all the way to the Commissioner of Education. That was about a 2.5-year process, and we lost every step of the way. But let me tell you what that ended up doing. We had then, at the end of that process, we had a decision from the Commissioner of Education that told us exactly why we were losing. So what do you do with that? You take it to your next legislative session and to your next, to a legislator and say, this is what we need to change because this is how we're losing. You've got legislators who are saying, oh, we don't like these books in the schools, but we don't know what to do. Okay, this case right here, this thing that shows how we lost every step of the way tells you how we win. You have to lose in order to figure out how to win and
Absolutely.
What to put in legislation. So losing every step of the way can help. Don't
Absolutely.
Give up.
It shows the process that needs to change, and That's therefore
right.
the law that needs to change the process.
That's right. So what we learned that case was that we did not have good definitions. We didn't have good definitions of what we wanted to prohibit. And that's how we came up with profane and indecent. So
that is great. Well, I really hope that parents and educators and members of the public watching will look to you guys and look to what you're doing in Texas. You guys are an amazing resource, and you're organized and you're well articulated and educated. And because I know that people everywhere want to fight, they just don't know how. But we need to organize, and we need to figure out what has worked and what hasn't worked. And you guys are really amazing at helping us with that.
Thank you so much. And thank you so much for all that you are doing to get the word out and to get the message out and to make a difference. And I'll pray for your state.
Oh, thank you. Yes, we need all the help that we can get here. So,
absolutely.
We still go to our local library all the time, but our eyes are glued on everything. And it's a bummer that this is the way it has to be. It's like, my wife is a nurse by trade, but it's like she has always wanted to be a librarian because she loves libraries and she loves literature and books. But it's it's like, well, not with this current climate, but we also need some good ones.
We do. Yes, we need good libraries.
Yes, we need some good librarians. And if you are a, librarian listening to this, I've had some pushback from some really great librarians said, this is not us. It's like, we see you, we love you, we value you, and we are on your side. So please keep fighting for what is righteous and good.
Yeah, don't quit. Don't quit. I mean, a lot of the good ones are quitting because they just can't, they don't want to take the pressure, they don't want to be in the middle of the fight. And so they just quit. And we can't do that as Christians, especially, you know, we need Christian teachers and we need Christian librarians to be strong and stand for what's right.
Absolutely. Awesome. Well, Shannon, thank you so much. We'll link your website in the show notes here, but tell us again, where is the best place to go for some resources if a parent wants to know, or how can they start a local chapter in their local town?
So we don't have the county chapters anymore. We moved to a state model at the beginning of last year. And so we don't have county models, but if you go to citizensdefendingfreedom.com, you'll see what states we're in. And if you are in a state that we're not in, which is highly likely because we're only in about five states at this point, and you want to start a chapter there, you can, you know, just reach out. Where would you reach out? Go to citizensdefendingfreedom.com and, and there's a, you know, contact us thing and say that you want to, you would like to look into starting a chapter in your state. And I will say we typically go through, a church. We look for a church that is bold and, ready to take action and is willing to start a ministry in their church, a faith in action ministry, and activate their church to start going to school board meetings, start going to your commissioner's court meetings, you know, start going to your city council meetings and figure out what you're passionate about and deploy your church out into the civic community. And so if you're wanting to do that, contact us that way, citizensdefendingfreedom.com. And then you asked me one other thing. What was it? Oh, resources. There's a citizen resource library on our page. Cool. So I think that's a tab at the top of the website, and it just says resources. So click on that, and there's a whole library of all kinds of. We have elections is one of the things that we focus on, education, and then faith. We have a faith arm, and so resources for all of those. There's a great fatherhood campaign on there. You can try to get that started in your community.
Check that out.
Yeah, absolutely.
Awesome.
So thank you so much.
Well, Shannon, thank you for your time. We really appreciate it and appreciate the ministry that you are doing there in Texas.
Thank you.
Well, everyone, thank you so much for joining us on this episode of Calibrate Conversations. We pray that you can embrace God's standard for sexuality, fight for your family, fight for righteousness, fight for things that are good and true and beautiful, and God will honor what we are doing. So make sure you go to calibrateministries.com for more ministry resources.